Hi, and welcome to the Inside Out Security Show. I'm your host, Cindy Ng, and I'm joined by security practitioners who will introduce themselves. And today's icebreaker question is about pacemakers. And I didn't realize that there were third-party components to pacemakers, but apparently if we combined all the security flaws, it would have over 8,000. And I'm not being morbid, just being responsible. If you did need a pacemaker and you knew about all these different security flaws, how would you assess the situation?
Hi, this is Killian. Well, that's a really tough one. A lot of ways it's very, you know, matter of life and death. You're taking a gamble to get the pacemaker in the first place. They don't just go about giving them out for fun, so you clearly need it. So you have to accept the risk or potentially face death. I guess that's a decision to take up with you and your doctor. You have to think, though, the likelihood for exploitation of something like this would probably be fairly minimal. It would either be, in my estimation, a targeted attack against you for some reason, because there's not a ton of profit in it, except for, again, maybe you're going to run a Bond villain thing and exploit a super rich guy by not zapping his pacemaker. But it's not like ransomware, for example, where you have a very high ROI for what you put out there. Then, again, what are the benefits of the doctor monitoring? Could that be shut off entirely? Is that something you're willing to sacrifice to not run the risk of somebody potentially causing harm to you via the device? So there are pretty complex questions involved there, and I don't know if there's any good answers. Aside from that, holding these device manufacturers accountable, if something happens, there's probably not any case law on it, but you know, who would be at fault in that case, especially if they've had these vulnerabilities made known to them?
Hi, this is Mike, and I want to disagree with everything that Killian said.
Excellent.
All right. So starting with, I don't think you can talk to your doctor about this at all. This is not their area of expertise, you know, to assess this stuff. I think it takes place at a whole different level. And as to like holding them responsible, there's been massive amounts of case law on this stuff, not about security vulnerabilities, but about medical malpractice. I mean, there's all sorts of medical device issues and things that have caused people to, you know, either have really bad outcomes or even to die. It's a clear malpractice issue if something happens. I mean, if it was up to me, I would still accept this, but I'd be terrified. Certainly better than immediately, you know, having a heart attack and dying. But I think there is a lot of danger to this stuff where, just as we've seen on the open internet, there's so much of the attacks aren't an attack of like, I'm sitting down to go, you know, exploit this particular person or a particular company. It's just I'm running a script that's doing all sorts of crazy stuff. And if it's a situation where who knows what it is that, you know, it's a virus that's just scanning for Bluetooth equipment that's local and it happens to find your pacemaker, like what happens? In summation, I think Killian should get a pacemaker.
Can I start a GoFundMe page for it?
Sure, why not?
This is Forrest, and I mean, short of just living my entire life in a Faraday cage, trying to avoid anyone coming anywhere near me electronically, I mean, it doesn't seem like there's much choice. I think there was, the chart of the all the different types of vulnerabilities tested across four manufacturers, and like one of them, like the best one, was maybe like 10% like passing, I think, some of those tests. Like, it was not good. And I mean, this kind of goes into, and I swear we talk about it every time we talk about IoT devices, but I mean, you know, if there's no like market demand for, I mean, not that a pacemaker is IoT necessarily, if there's no market demand for increased security, I mean, I don't see much motivation for these companies to offer it, you know, considering the additional development costs and research costs that it would, you know, necessarily entail. Maybe it's time for there to be some sort of, you know, lobby for this to try and get some regulation.
Cindy, you were describing this in the beginning that it's third parties. So it's third party libraries and someone who's building a pacemaker, they are still purchasing items. They're purchasing, you know, the RF package. They're purchasing, you know, a lot of the things that a lot of the subsystems and then putting that together for this particular use. And what I would hope happens is that those subsystems, part of the pacemaker manufacturer's engineering process is evaluating those, and that it's a situation where, oh, we're going to use the one that does have the capability for better security. And hopefully that goes the same for all the other IoT devices, the talking bears and such that we have littering our homes.
Thanks, guys. Before we begin, as always, our housekeeping announcement is if you're a regular listener and enjoy our show, please go to iTunes to rate and review the Inside Out Security Show, and we'll put you in the running for a deck of our InfoSec cards that's based on the Cards Against Humanity card game. And to learn more, please visit veronis.com/review. So let's go to today's show. Over the past few months, yes, we've talked a lot about IoT devices and our privacy and our differences of opinion about them. But what about things like social media? Twitter, they created a product called Studio, and it's supposed to help publishers streamline their publishing of video content. And security researchers, they found out that you can publish tweets on other people's accounts without stealing their passwords. So first, please tell us if you have a Twitter account, even if it's private, it still counts, and your thoughts on the Twitter Studio vulnerability.
I have a Twitter account. It's a lot of retweets of weird memes and things. So, you know, be sure to seek it out for all that goodness.
Wait, what's the handle?
M as in Michael, Buckby as in Buckby. So I think there's a real tendency, especially in the technical world, to downplay this kind of stuff. We have a president who tweets often that if you could take control of someone else's account, a high profile person, you could do a lot of damage or to both a brand and also to the country or the world.
In shocking news, I actually completely agree with Mike now, even though I don't have a Twitter account. And I think he's entirely right on those points. So many people use it for news nowadays, and a lot of people do use it to consume information. And it becomes very, very dangerous if you're getting this information and the source might not be as reputable as it should be, even though the account it's coming from might be something that you trust.
So I can certainly see why it would be a complication for people to see something that supposedly came from an individual person and, you know, misattribute it. But yeah, I mean, the bigger risk I would actually argue is probably like some kind of, you know, journalistic publication that's like a trusted institution, you know, getting something kind of maybe, actually I didn't see this in sort of the, what we had read about the vulnerability, but sneaking something into the older tweets, you know what I mean? Maybe like a year ago where nobody's necessarily going to notice. I don't know if that was a possibility, but something like that, where you're just kind of sneaking it under the radar and in a place, kind of putting it somewhere on the record. That seems to be like the huge vulnerability here, the huge danger.
My thought was, I guess, going to like stock manipulation, where you go in, you're going to the GE account and announce that, oh yeah, we're going to do a merger and acquisition with, you know, this giant pharmacy company. And then their stock goes up or down as you think. And then, or you declare war on another country in a tweet, you know, it can go either way.
Yeah. Those, I mean, all good options for sure.
I want to get back to something Killian said, which is that he doesn't have an account, but I'm following this Lizardman 2789. And I was assured that this was your account, Killian. Is that not correct? It's mostly just pictures of geckos like hanging out at the beach wearing sunglasses. So I assume this was your account, Killian, but I feel wronged, sort of misled here. So
I mean, you know, if our lizard overlords are listening, I swear my allegiance to them in case anybody asks.
Oh, well, good enough. So.
Another social media story is about Instagram. So these hackers, they targeted sites that victims frequent often. And on the site, the users are tricked to download a Firefox plugin that's really a virus. And then once they download the plugin, it allows the hackers to monitor everything they type into the browser, including passwords, their personal info, banking logins, and then the hackers are using comments on Britney Spears' Instagram account and on her photos. They would comment, and they're weird, unintelligible comments that I'm not going to repeat on here. You can look it up online yourselves. And what it is their secret code. The comments double as code that include a string of characters that create a link to a command and control hacker server. So guys, this is super, super tricky, but also I think very clever.
Well, I learned a lot from reading this, mostly about Britney Spears' fashion sense and what's happening in Milan. But also, I agree. I thought this was very interesting. So how they discovered this was they disassembled the Firefox extension and found out like what it was doing. And it just goes through the comments and takes a hash of each one. And if it matches a predetermined value, it then takes that and makes it the Bitly link. And so it just obscures like where exactly this stuff is. Yeah, and the other thing that struck me as hilarious, you opted not to read the comment, Cindy, but I would like to do a dramatic reading of it, if that's all right with everyone.
I don't want to hear.
Smith 2155. too hot. Make love ID to her. Up, up, ups. Hashtag hot. Hashtag X. And it doesn't appear any different than any other comment on Britney Spears' Instagram photos. So
I can't even, my ears and eyes, I can't look at you. Why do they keep on targeting like singers like Ariana Grande and Britney Spears? I never really hear about male.
Wait, is her last, do you really pronounce it Grande? I don't know if I've ever like heard it out loud.
Oh my God, I'm like the worst person at pronouncing stuff.
That was grand. Did you just call her Grande?
I thought it was Grande, so.
Oh, was it? Oh, then I'm, all right, then that's on me. All right.
Hey, let's get back into security mode, guys.
Sorry.
It says, I ordered an Ariana Venti, and I did not get it, and I am very angry. So this is a common issue with all sorts of malware, is where do you put the command and control servers? And there's, you know, stories and stories about this where, you know, some group sets up the command and control server and then another group takes it over, or, you know, security researchers take it over and they stop the malware and things. And so, well, this is sort of interesting because it targets, I think, probably less going for women and more going for just really popular accounts to kind of hide the traffic and hide the comments in amongst everything else.
Yeah, I mean, the cool thing about it, too, is that it's a pretty clever way to avoid detection. It's oftentimes a little bit easier to, you know, suss out weird connections. But if the browser's plugin is going to Twitter or Instagram, that looks more like normal traffic. Kind of cool thing there is they've used some old internet tricks, encoding unprintable characters in the string to get the hash that they're looking for. So it doesn't appear, at least outright, to be particularly odd, at least for photo comments or Twitter feed comments. So it's a neat way that they've kind of circumvented some things and hidden under sort of somewhat expected behavior for people.
It makes perfect sense, though. You know, put it somewhere noisy because there's already so much noise there.
I think the theme is, let's just not use social media.
I thought it was, we should go and make better comments on these Instagram photos. Is that not what it was?
Okay, so outside social media, guys, this is also very sneaky. There's malware that can be installed on a router that can take control of the device's LED and then use that to transmit data. It reminds me of this article that we talked about a while back on Wired magazine, where there was a drone that can hover over an office building window, and then based on how fast the server light flashes, it can, or some kind of device light flashing, it can also transmit data. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's actually the same researchers that came up with this new one that had put together that old one. It's definitely pretty cool because they figured out a way, you're bandwidth limited with the old way, the quote unquote old way, because you have a single LED blinking. So you have a cap on how much data you can transmit. But on the front of, you know, the routers, you can increase the bandwidth dramatically because you have four or five, you know, multiple lights on the front that blink as they transmit data. So it's a clever way to be more effective and transmit more data.
I want them to open up an Etsy shop where I can buy one of these as a clock. And it's just, you know, you just send information to it and it blinks the right bits out. I think that'd be nice. It'd be a good Christmas gift.
I want to say I've seen those, though.
Like, they make like binary clocks, but not yeah, quite like this. Like, this looks legit.
You want to get all of your information via blinking router lights? Is that?
Yes. Hashtag X, hashtag blinky light, hashtag hot. That's how I get all my information from now on.
We've talked about IoT devices, social media, LEDs, but let's not omit the old-fashioned way of printing something as a way to exfiltrate data. And by now, you've all heard of the NSA contractor Reality Winner, who printed documents and they were able to track it back to who it was. And really interesting article on how print jobs contain a certain pattern of yellow dots that can potentially out you. What are some key takeaways?
My first takeaway is, I think this is the old thing, which is the tracking of the dots. Like, there was a list that went out of like, oh, here's all the printers that do this. And the person who compiled the list, his first thing was like, well, that was like version one of all of this. There's actually a lot more tracking that happens now with Moiré patterns, M-O-I-R-E. Little slash on it that, you know, can be used for tracking and other things. It's just something we never think about, but that a lot of this stuff, you know, steganography of, you know, imprinting patterns and information into images. And that's what a print is. It's an image. It could be used for this kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's definitely, if we look at kind of the digital world, the document tagging and watermarking is, I wouldn't say it's a new industry, but it's getting a lot more attention lately, especially with a lot of the compliance regulations. But it's interesting to see that, as Mike did mention, that this has been around for quite a while in the physical world, that but nobody really ever thinks of it. And, you know, in a lot of cases, people do assume that printing things out is, you know, more secure in a way that their actions can't be tracked. And to a certain extent, that's correct. But if the documents ever turn up somewhere again, there is a way to track it back to the source, which is exactly what happened.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, I had never heard of this before. Somehow I had clearly missed that article a couple of years ago about the different printer models, which might have been the first time that I would have heard about it. But, you know, especially now, you know, talking about Reality Winner and some previous kind of famous leakers, I guess you'd call them. It just seems like fascinating, especially now talking about like leakers in the government right now. What are their methods for not being, you know, known or kind of revealed? I don't know, just from a practical perspective and sort of, you know, in the same way, like you watch a spy movie or something, you always think of like some of the mechanics of things. Found it fascinating to kind of follow along and like see the, you know, what here is the problem, you know, how could you mitigate some of these things like that? I just found it really interesting. Even if it was my first exposure to it.
We talk a lot about is the technology can be used for good or bad, and, you know, tracking leaks, whatever you want to think about that. But, you know, where I think the start of a lot of this was that printers, especially color printers, which is what we're talking about here, they get at least attempted efforts at doing counterfeit bills. And so this was part of the mitigation for that. And there's like built-in code in printers to stop you from printing things that appear too much like a dollar bill, too much like U.S. currency. There's other places where this comes up. Like I used to have a friend who worked at eBay, and then they bought PayPal. And one of the things that he wanted to introduce was that every image on the page when it loads up, that they would just like bake the IP address into. So then when people set up like phishing scam pages where, and of course they rip all the images right off the PayPal website, you'd be able to track down like what IP address was the person that actually stole the image in the first place to put on their phishing site and things. So there's a lot of different ways that this stuff can come out. And
that's a really good segue to our next topic, Mike. As you said, we talk about methods and ways people use to exfiltrate data for their own gain. And just as importantly, we often talk about how data can potentially be used against our privacy and as citizens. And earlier this week, the Supreme Court announced that they'd be willing to hear a ACLU case that could impact our digital privacy rights. So in this case, the cops got thousands of cell phone records from a gentleman known as Carpenter. And ultimately, the question is, vendors have so much sensitive information about us, and they're basically deciding on the trade-off between our technological convenience for privacy. And what are your thoughts on what can potentially happen based on how they might rule?
This one's pretty interesting, and it kind of comes down to really, you know, what constitutes a search. And in this case, the government is contending that they didn't look at the contents of the conversation, the cell phone conversation, so they didn't record the audio, for example. But what they did is they collected the cell phone records of the various devices connecting to the cell towers, and they collected the metadata about it, so the data about the call, you know, the to, from, the location, things like that. And they contend that that data is not, it does not constitute a search. That could really change a lot of things with how we process data. You know, even think about, you know, proxy information or your firewall. You have a lot of that metadata information without even reassembling the contents of the packet. You have the, you know, source IP, destination IP address, the other header information. So if that type of metadata, if the Supreme Court rules that collecting that type of metadata or sharing that type of metadata constitutes a search, that could really change on how we implement a lot of security practices.
Well, I think that this went beyond that. This went to the location. And so it was really trying to set up, you know, really the location of the person beyond just what was happening. And so they say, oh, well, Carpenter's phone was shown to be in communication with cell towers near four robberies over a 5-month window. And something interesting to me would have been, well, how many other people were also near those four cell phone towers during that same time? That's not shown. I get worried about this kind of stuff just because I worry about it being an overreach. And some of the language that's used in it, whether it's a search or whether it's, you know, just records that are in a sense broadcasting everywhere you go with your cell phone, I worry that it's too much.
you know what, Mike? Maybe you should try not making cell phone calls around the site of robbery so often.
Well, this wasn't even that. This was just like it went nearby.
Right.
There's a whole other part of like, I guess the assumption is you are your cell phone. You know, wherever it goes is where you're at. Though, you know, clearly that's not the case because I find my wife's cell phone all over the place in weird places.
If people want records, they're going to get them somehow. But what's important is a log of how do you know if, like, your wife is really where she said she was and if anyone went in there to alter that log.
I found my wife's cell phone in a box of graham crackers. So I guess that means she ate the last of them. In court, I can prove that now.
What's going on in Mike's corner?
I wanted to point to something that the Varonis Marketing Group put together, which was this really cool visualization of U.S. state data breach disclosure requirements. And what's so neat about this to me is that so often the stuff we talk about is so dry. And I think probably half the people fell asleep just hearing the words U.S. state data breach disclosure requirements. But it's this very complicated topic. And we were talking before the show about like all sort of the weird implications of it, of, well, you have a forum site that you set up, you know, to talk about Pokemon Go and then it gets hacked. Like, you don't think like, oh yeah, what I should do is call up the attorney general in Texas and tell him that 1,000 people in his state were affected by my forum hack. But there's those weird situations like that. And it's very hard to convey that in just dry text. So we have some really awesome maps that show this and some different things. So it's on the blog. And we also had a lot of great comments and different things of people on Reddit and Imgur and a few other places this week. So check it out, blog.varonis.com.
I like how the different graphics highlight like specific states like Texas and North Dakota. Those are the two places. Is it something about taxes?
I can tell you. 1 second. So Texas, they consider account information. So if any sort of username password combination is leaked, they require disclosure. And biometric information, not DNA information, electronic signature, no as well, but medical information, date of birth, mother's maiden name, not health insurance, and not tax for Texas. So
I just liked how the different graphics highlighted certain states and the particular category. So I thought that was helpful.
Yeah.
Because I have to be honest with you, too. I kind of zoned out when you listed the date of birth.
Yeah. So it's much better than hearing me talk about it. So please go check that out.
Yeah. Look at the graphic. It's worth your while. So thanks, Mike Buckby, Killian Engler, and Forrest Temple, and all our listeners for joining us today. If you want to follow us on Twitter to find some of the stories we're discussing, you can find us at infosec_podcast. Thanks, and we'll meet up again next week. Bye.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye. Bye, guys.